preacher used to come into that penitentiary. And since I first stepped onto a spiritual path, I'm willing to look at anything spiritual. I'll pray with anybody. I don't care. Because it's all in here anyway. Anyway, we were asking him, don't you ever get screwed up? And he said, of course I do. I get doubtful sometimes. I don't know which way to go. Something will look really good because it feels good. Be careful of those. Okay? Just be careful. And we asked him, what does he do? He said, when I have a doubt as to whether I should take an action or not, I take him by the hand and say, if I go do this, will you go with me? And I either get a real strong yes or a real strong no. If I don't get one or the other of those, I definitely don't do it. It's either got to be yes or I don't go. Now, I know, of course, where I am, God is, and He'll go anywhere with me. But God protects me from myself by nudging me with little doubts. If you're having doubt, don't feel bad. It's probably the voice of God saying, you're about to screw up, bud. Okay, you're missing something here. Stop. Go ask Jerry what he thinks of this. I came to my sponsor once with a magnificent spiritual thing I was doing. It took an hour to explain it to him. He looked at me and he said, that's insane. And I had to, the reason I'd gone to him is I had this vague feeling that it might be. And it was. I'm to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Okay. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as He would have me. My MO is when you're worried or in doubt, run in circles, scream, shout, create a diversion. Okay. When I'm in doubt, I'm to sit quietly and ask for the right thought or action. Give me direction and strength. The basic prayers I've learned here are those two. First of all, give me some direction, because I am at all times confused. Because I am at all times fully aware that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, and the human experience is, gimme, 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 gimme. If this were right, I'd feel good. Okay. Where's mine? That can't be mine. It's not big enough. Wrong color. Wrong size. Bah. That's always going on. So give me some direction. Do I go here or there? I don't think God cares where I work. As long as I do. I'm to be self-supporting through my own contributions. And it doesn't matter where, because where I am, God is, I can do that. But you know what happens once I get direction? That's a real bitch. Because now I know what I'm supposed to do. I don't want to do that. I'm just a little kid. That's way more than I can do. Come on, lighten up, will you? So I have to ask Him for the strength to just go do basic stuff. And I'm not talking about mountaintop stuff. One of the most excruciatingly painful and boring experiences of life is girls' basketball or girls' volleyball when they're 10 and 11 and 12. I would rather do almost anything but sit in a gymnasium full of young women screaming and yelling and playing ball. But I raised daughters, and I have to go. One of the second most boring things in the world when I'm in my self state is 6-year-old soccer. I mean, these kids' legs are so small, if they get close to the ball, they stumble. It's not soccer. It's chaos. I have to go. I have a 6-year-old grandson. And I have to pray for the strength to get there. Once I get there, I love it. I absolutely love it. This is something to watch these little children having that much fun. But in my head, it's boring and dull, and I'm going to spend 2 hours, and nothing's going to happen. Nobody's going to win. Blah, 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 blah. Besides, I have important shit to do. So God, give me the strength. Give me the strength when that phone rings at 7:30 and it's the 100th call today to answer it. And not say, yeah, what do you want? Because I don't want to answer it. And if I do answer it, I want you to know damn good and well you called at the wrong time. Please, God, don't let me do that. My life becomes a prayer. It's not mountaintop stuff. Okay. Keep me tuned to the people that I need and that need me. Give me the strength to go through with this. Some of you know my wife. I am the most blessed man on this planet. And I almost missed her. When I met her, my sons and I lived at the base of a 14,000-foot mountain in Buena Vista, Colorado. My backyard was the mountain, and my front yard was the Arkansas River. And I worked 6 hours a day at the reformatory doing work I loved, and the rest of the time we screwed around like bachelors do. We had a black dog and a white cat, and a life that if you're going to dream about a good life, I had it. Went fishing when I felt like it. Didn't go if I didn't feel like it. And I met her and fell in love. And it wasn't enough. We either had to spend our lives together or stop seeing each other after 2 months. We just knew that. I had to go back to that mountain and pray about this one. And look at the selfishness. What am I going to have to give up? Because her work's more important than mine, we'd have to move back to the city and just go through all kinds of changes. And I got past all that, and it was simply a matter, give me some direction and the strength. Give me the strength to make the move. Yeah. Give me the strength to let go. Give me the strength to let go. And I haven't given up anything. It just looked like I'd have to. Prayer's a very right now deal. A while back, I really hated my job. Because I'm not suited for the job they had me doing. I was an administrator in a correctional facility. I'm not suited to that job. They have paperwork that needs done on time. And I discovered that I don't care if it ever gets done. You don't want me in an administrative position because I really don't care. I'm supposed to chew on the staff all the time because they're not getting it done. I don't do that very well. Anyway, I took myself out of the job. But on one day, I was really, really angry. I woke up angry. I hated my job. I didn't want to go to work. There was nothing about it I liked. And I just did what it said here. I prayed to meet that problem as he would have me and to get some direction and some strength. And it got clear. All I had to do that day was show up and bring the Spirit of God into the place. I didn't have to do anything. See, I get locked up on tasks. This isn't about tasks. It's not about what I do. It's about who I am. And all I had to do that day was bring the Spirit of God with me into the place. That was my job for the day. And I had to ask for the strength to do that, because that's a big job for a little kid. To walk through a whole day being nothing but in the presence of God takes all the strength you've got. And then some. So, my friend promised when these things were done. Oh, wait a minute, I wasn't through there. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. See, from the very beginning, we're told this isn't about us. This isn't about me. I got mine already. I got mine the 26th of December, 1967. I got all I'm ever going to get. I got life. I'd killed myself, and he woke me up. That's all I'm ever going to get. The rest of it's for you. So I've made some prayers along the way to try to match these things, because I really am burdened with an ego and self-centeredness, even though I'm spiritually awake. I'm subject to spiritual pride and spiritual greed and spiritual arrogance. Grandma Hannah told us one time that only the dimensions change, honey, she said. This is the most spiritual person I've ever met. I looked at her one time and I knew I was looking into the face of God. And she laughed and she says, you know, I used to look down on people. Now that I'm spiritual, I look down on people who look down on people. Okay. And I'm burdened with that. And I know what I need most. I need to be filled with the Spirit of God. That's all I need. And this tells me I can't ask for that for myself, only as it will bear on my usefulness to others. So I made a prayer that has worked for me for years. I'll give it to you. Please fill me with your loving Spirit and let it flow through me and into the lives of others. That one works. As long as I'm willing to let it overflow to you, I'm going to be full. Not perfect. I mean, I can be a spiritual asshole, and I'm good at that. Be careful of that one, because that one's fun. Self-righteousness is one of the most fun things there is on the planet. No. Isn't it? Oh, yeah. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. See, that's what this is about, not sobriety, about having a relationship with God. How do I relate with God? Well, as a newfound friend, I can grab that one. I have to discard all of what I think is God. Today, 30 years away from that first experience, I must be willing to let go of what I think is God so that I can have a new relationship with God each day. See, my granddaughter keeps teaching me things. I related to her one way when she was a week old and a different way when she was a month old. And now our relationship has changed because she's a year old and she's on her feet and moving. We relate differently, and my relationship with God must be the same, a new one, constantly. If I get locked in on the old one, I can't have a new one. It will never grow. And I'll keep expecting from Him things that just aren't there anymore. Okay. First, we had to feed her. Hand-spoon feed her. Just like I do people a sponsor. And then the day came when she wanted to spoon herself, and I had to be willing to sit there and watch her put it in her eye and in her hair and on the floor. And then she started offering it to me, and it went in my eye and in my hair and on the floor. Okay. Now she feeds herself. I just put the stuff on and get out of the way and clean up afterwards. Isn't that what you do for the people you sponsor? Eventually, she's going to have to clean up her own act. But that's down the road somewhere. So the relationship changes and needs to be new and renewed regularly. And that's my job, to keep the house clean so it can be renewed all the time. That I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. And these are those elements: belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. I truly believe from my own experience that the belief in the power of God is far more important than a belief in God. I can die believing in God if I don't believe that the power is there to transform me, to change me. We're talking about a complete change here. From one way of life, one way of thinking, one way of acting, to something brand new. And we are powerless to do it, individually or as a group. I don't care what the myth says. There is no group in AA or out of AA that can keep me sober. I can't live with you 24 hours a day. You may be able to keep me sober in this room, but you can't do it afterwards. It takes the power of God to do that. Okay? You can give me advice until it runs out my ears, and I won't follow it because I don't have the power. It takes the power of God. honesty and humility. Well, there was one I had trouble with, because I know this isn't about being humiliated. And so I searched and saw all the cute little things about humility, and I know you probably got 7 or 8 of them stuck in your book too. And then I found one that made sense to me. Humility is the willingness to seek and do the will of God. That's all it is. Okay. My will is not set aside and makes me a robot. My will is to do His will. It's the proper use of the will. He gave me that. If God made any two of us the same, one of us would have been unnecessary. Okay? It's like, true. I truly believe that the power of God at work in my life is best demonstrated by willingness. Willingness is the expression of power. The instant I am willing to do anything, it's already done. The power is accessed. All I brought here was willingness. All I carry to you today is willingness. This is intimidating as hell. I don't know if you understand that or not. To fly out here where you barely speak English and expect me to... Well, I've been listening to you. Some of you have accents. It's scary to raise children. Give you a little tip. It's a crime to raise children. True. Raising children means I'm going to impose what I think is right and wrong and make them conform to that. Do you like it when people do that to you? Then quit doing it to your kids. I must be an example to my children of how to live. They pick it up. They're not stupid. But that's another story we can talk about later. Okay. I am willing today to be looked upon as a fool. And if you're going to do this from time to time, people will call you a fool. This being total commitment to whatever it takes to let God express Himself in my life and through my life. You will be called a fool. You will be called numerous names. They're all blessings. They really are. If somebody isn't talking ugly about you, you're just screwing around. You're not doing anything. One of the measures of my effectiveness is the quality of my enemies. And I have some really high quality enemies. Okay? I've got a lot of friends too. I'm not talking about deliberately going out and pissing people off, but you can't help it. There are people who like me no matter what I do. And there are people who don't like me no matter what I do. Okay? My very presence in a room sometimes disturbs somebody. And when I open my mouth, then we're really in trouble. Okay. And they're the people that believe everything I say is gospel truth. And you're the ones I like to play with. Because if you believe that, I got some whoppers for you. Okay. A new order of things. If I've been lying, I stop lying. That takes the power of God, because lying is one of my staples for survival. Okay? And we can go through that whole litany. We don't need to. It's a new order of things, a new way of living, a new way of thinking. Okay? They gave me great wisdom one time. We were talking about money, a bunch of thieves talking about money and the acquisition of money. Bruce says, well, let me tell you how you do it. You want money? Get a job. What kind, Bruce? Doesn't matter. Just get a job. Then show up on time. Regularly. And while you're there, do a little work. And at the end of a certain period of time, they'll give you money. But how much, Bruce? It doesn't matter. It'll be enough. There's never enough. There is never enough. And I have to do that battle all the time. But I'm willing to let God take me to where What I have is enough. Being happy isn't getting what you want, it's wanting what you have. That was cute, wasn't it, Jerry? I stole that from somewhere. Simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. That's a terrible thing to tell us. I am by nature one who believes that everything should just be given to me. Why should I have to work for it? I come from a family of musicians, and I play several instruments, none of them well. I really loved the trumpet. I heard Perez Prado doing Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White one day, and knew I was going to be a trumpeter. And I was doing good until I got into the band, and some other kid played better than I did, and I quit. He did something ridiculous like practice. He spent 2 or 3 hours a day practicing. I figure a half an hour a week's enough. I should be able to play Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White now. And my whole life is like that. Instant gratification. Now. There's a price that has to be paid for this. And here's the price. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't read what it said the first time. It says destruction of self. My ego is going to die and immediately starts war. Just self-centeredness. Destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. In all things. I used to practice that at Safeway. When I came out of the penitentiary, I'd been sober a year and a half, and I understood clearly I did not know how to live out here. It was clear as a bell. If I don't know how to live out here, I'd have never been living there. And I'm to turn in all things to the Father of light. And I'm quite willing to say, I don't even know what I should be eating. I really don't. So I'd stand at the Safeway bread counter and pray. For my current condition, which of these should I be eating? And I'd wait. And I've got a little mental trick I use when I'm trying to make a decision like that. Instead of trying to focus, which regular people do, I let everything go out of focus. And then whatever comes back into focus, that's the one I pick. It's easier, because I can let go of things much easier than I can focus. I have a very short attention span. That's why I get along with children. I can move as fast as they can from one thing to another. No difficulty at all. What I have trouble is focusing. Jerry? Hello.
We get to listen to this lofty stuff, and now I get to go in with him, you know. Everything, God is everything or nothing. Somebody owns a black Honda, license number L676BC, New York. It's a black Honda Civic. Your lights are on. We got it. One of the things that I've always needed from the old-timers is I needed to know the facts about themselves. I needed to know the truth about them. I was talking this morning to John, and by the time I was 13 years sober, or 13 years dry, I didn't belong here anymore. You know, I was in a meeting one night and out in Denver, and I was just 3 months shy of being 13 years in this fellowship, and I was in that meeting that night, and I thought, God Almighty, I don't even belong in AA anymore. I can't even do this right. And I really believed that, but I also knew something else. I didn't belong out there either, and that was a bad spot to be in. You don't belong in here, but you don't belong out there. And I really didn't know what to do. I truly didn't know what to do. And I was looking at this little deal of Bill's one night along in that period of time. And when he was talking to Abby, he said, besides being unmindful of the welfare of others And it finally got clear to me I was unmindful of the welfare of others and had always been unmindful of the welfare of others. Even when I am in my grandest condition and just being super good to you, I am unmindful of your welfare and I'm thinking about my welfare. That's my greatest little scam, by the way. I'm doing these grand and noble things for you. Now, where's mine? See, I'm always in a deal-making process. Except I don't tell you we're dealing. I'll give you this, darling, in exchange for, but I don't tell you what the exchange is. I'll give you about 2% of what I got, and I want 100% of what you got. Unmindful of the welfare of others, and that, for the very first time, I began to understand. I was not born in New England. You've probably picked up on that by now. I was not born in New England like Bill was, and I wasn't on Wall Street like Bill was, but I was just like Bill because I am unmindful of the welfare of others. One night in that same meeting, people were talking about the third step, and by that time I was totally convinced that I was alcoholic. And 13 years sober, living with what I refer to as untreated alcoholism, and untreated alcoholism in its simplest terms is you can't stand to wake up and face another day. You can't live. And in that condition, I thought, what in the world am I going to do? And in that little meeting, they were talking about this little process and the willingness to do anything and everything. Anything you had to do, a complete willingness. And somebody mentioned the third step prayer, and I thought, well, I wonder which third step prayer they're talking about. And I mean, when you're 13 years sober, I mean, let's face it, you can't go up to somebody. You're supposed to know something, 13 years sober. Well, hell, I'd been pontificating for years telling people how to stay sober. We used to talk about relationships a lot. That was a great topic, and that's another story, and I'm not going to go there, but finally I discovered that the third step prayer they were talking about was the third step prayer in the book. And so quite secretly, because I'm alky, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody. I've been around this deal for 13 years, and I've never taken the third step. So I looked it up, and I took the third step. I just read the third step prayer out of the book. And I felt pretty good for just about 30 minutes. Got some relief. I thought, God, I don't have to run the show anymore. And then I began to try to go forward in this little process, and I really got stuck. And Don was talking about willingness. And there my life was, just as absolutely worthless and miserable as I'd ever been in my life. 13 years, almost 13 years away from a drink. And I was trying to do this little old deal. Can you guys hear me all right? I don't know if I'm on or not. Ellie's probably a good deal if he's not hearing me. Ellie, maybe you get a little break. I don't know. But I was sitting there, and I tried to write inventory on my own. My mind really is broken. When it says simple but not easy, I don't hear that part about not easy. I hear simple, and simple to me means easy. This is the simplest thing in the world. I mean, it really is simple, but it's not easy, and I didn't know that. And I don't know about paying a price. See, I've never paid a price. If there's a way I can skim over something and scam my way through it, that's in my nature. I've been doing it my whole life. And so I get caught in this little deal, and I make the mistake, and I take third step prayer, and now I got to go on. Except what happened was it got very painful, because I didn't go on, didn't know how to go on. But I was sitting one morning in my apartment there in Denver, and the thought came to me. It says, "Willing to go to any length, willing to go to any length." And I thought, "Just how willing are you, Jerry?" I thought, "Hell, I'm willing." I was desperate. And then the thought came to me, "Just how willing are you? Are you willing to go?" See, there's something I really dislike, and what I really dislike is a hot, dry dusty climate. I just hate the constant heat, constant dryness. And so the thought came to my mind, if I ever got well, would I be willing to go to a place in Mexico and live in a single little old one-room apartment with a bare naked light bulb hanging down from the ceiling and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? Would I be willing to do that? And see, my mind had been saying I had complete willingness. Until that picture came into my mind, I thought, no, I ain't going to do that. Yeah, that's how my mind will lie to me. Yeah, I'm completely willing. But no, not that willing. And I recall those days, and the next morning I woke up and I thought about that some more. Are you willing to do that? And after a couple of days, and my despair was great. I'm an alky who really did have to get very ill in what we refer to as sobriety. And so a couple of days later, I'm still thinking about this image. Am I willing to go do that? And I thought, well, I might. And a few days later, I thought, you know, I don't really want to go do that. But my prayer became, I will go do that. Doesn't mean I'm going to like it, but I will go do that. See, I began to understand that I need to have the willingness. For those of you who don't know, I didn't have to go to Mexico. I ended up coming to New England where it's cool, a lot of green, a lot of rainfall, and I got to live with some of the most great alcoholics and most beautiful people I've ever experienced. But that was part of my little journey where I had to discover, what kind of willingness do I have? And I had to be taken to that point where I was completely willing. Untreated alcoholism is a tough deal to live with. But in order to discover that that was what was wrong with me, I had to start all the way back with this little deal of bills and say, am I at all like that? And I was. I just completely unmindful of the welfare of others. That's in my nature, to be focused on me. I had some fun. I got here last night and Frank brought something to me. Because this was a little stumbling block that had to do with my willingness. I had taken that third step prayer I was telling you about, and I started writing some inventory, and at that point I'd got clear on willingness. This is how quickly my alcoholic mind can jump back in. And I was working along, and it was not easy. It was not easy. By the way, I'm one who gets very blessed with having some nifty people put into my life. One of them happens to be I have two sons, and both of them are real neat. One was living with me at the time, just he and I by ourselves. He was 15 years old at the time, and I was trying to write this first inventory and try to go through this little process listed there on page 13. And I'd get into that four step, and I'd want to quit. I'd want to quit. Not that I'd want to quit, I would quit. Let's get it right. I'd say, oh, to hell with this. I'm quitting. I'm an immature man, in the way that I throw things, you know, throw it across the room. Hell, I ain't doing this. Too hard. My 15-year-old son would say to me, Dad, don't quit now. Don't quit now. See, he knew something that I didn't know. He's just a sane little kid. Great kid. He just knew that I shouldn't quit. He knew intuitively that I needed to follow through on this deal. But anyway, I'm sitting there and I'm writing or attempting to write inventory. And Frankie reminded me last night of that particular time in my life. I was still into self-help. Anybody ever try self-help? It's fun stuff. Doesn't work with a damn, but it's fun. So anyway, I bought this little book, and I was reading through it, and I came across a deal called My Personal Bill of Rights. And I started going down through there, and I started feeling good. Well, I had a right to be angry. Yes, sir. I'd been hurt. People had hurt me. So I called my sponsor and said, you know, listen, I've been having a tough time with this inventory, but I think I'm on the wrong track because I found something else. He said, really? Tell me about it. And I really didn't want to tell him about it because I thought this book and this personal bill of rights was so damn nifty. He needed a copy of this, and I'm going to be the guy to take it to him. Oh, and if anybody wants a copy of that bill of rights, we'll send out to a printer at Kinko's, and we'll get you some copies. Anyway, so I started telling him about it, and I didn't get very far into explaining this personal bill of rights, and he said, hold it. He said, you don't have any rights. I said, what do you mean I don't have any rights? Now, here's the thing that the old-timers know. He grabbed me when he said, we gave those away in the third step. See? Meaning, he and I had given away our rights in the third step. My life really wasn't any of my business. I don't have any personal rights anymore. You know? I really don't. Single greatest gift that's ever been given to me. And let me tell you why. From that little deal came some real clarity. I was given the gift of physical sobriety when I least deserved it. If you want to figure out your conception of God, ask yourself, when was I given the gift of physical sobriety? It may have just been yesterday, or 2 days ago, a week ago, a month ago, 6 years ago, I don't know when. But I know for me, I deserve the gift of physical sobriety when I least deserved it. I was given it when I least deserved it. My life really was lousy. I did not earn that gift. And 13 years later, with all sorts of arrogance, tremendous arrogance, and a tremendous closed mind. See, that's a part of my problem is that, you know, I'll always go back to the doctor's opinion. I'm unable to distinguish between the true and the false. I know right from wrong, but I can't tell true from false. People say, Jerry, you don't have an open mind. I say, the hell I don't. Somebody gave me a nifty tape by an AA speaker when I was in that period that I'm talking about, that 12 years and 8 months, 12 years and 9 months, coming up on 13 years. Gave me a neat tape. You know what I did with that tape? I threw that in the bottom of a suitcase. And my thought was, I don't do tapes. Dying, but I don't do tapes. And I had to get brought to a point of complete willingness to do this. And during that process, some awful good stuff happened. But some of us have to be reduced to nothing. Don, you've heard Don. That's what he's talking about. And I, too, had to finally get brought to a point of absolutely nothing. And the way that occurred for me was I told you during that time I had taken that third step prayer, trying to write the fourth step. Couldn't do it. Just, God, I just couldn't do it. And I kept looking at that third step and said, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. And see, I can't read even that right. I thought I had to bring something here. And one day I called a dear friend and I said, you know, I keep doing this third step prayer just over and over and over. And I said, you know, I don't have anything to give. He says, I offer myself to thee. And I said, hell, I don't have anything to offer. I mean, what does a little guy like me have to offer? And my little old alcoholic friend, he said, that's what God wants to start with, is nothing. He'll go from there. What a deal. Hell, I've always known I was nothing, way down deep. I've known there was something wrong with me, and I've known I was nothing. I don't have the power to change. Anybody ever tell you that? I told people before, I said, God, give me another chance. I promise I'll change. People look at me and they just shake their head. Jerry, you can't change. Yeah, I can. Give me another chance. God, people gave me chances and chances and chances. I never did make it. Never did make the grade, by the way. Never could change. So when I was first introduced to this, and way back in that second step, it said, came to believe a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. And I started down this little journey. I thought, you know, I never have really cared for me. Way down deep, I really don't care for me. And if there's a power of the universe that is that powerful, and if I can draw on that power to make me whatever he wants me to be, I'm going to take a shot because I have nothing to lose. I have absolutely nothing to lose. And I truly didn't. I truly didn't. But, you know, being an alcoholic, I keep hearing spiritual theories and they don't work. I gotta find something that is so simple that you can lay it out for me, and then I can say, well, I know what it says here, but what did you do? And if I can have a living, breathing alcoholic in front of me who says this is what I did, and he's just basically telling me this here, then I can grasp that. And I can see with my own eyes. Somebody said last night, how do you pick out a sponsor? I looked around till I found somebody who had what I wanted. Not whether they sounded good or didn't sound good, but had what I wanted. And what I finally saw in the person that I picked as a sponsor was a person I knew they were okay. You could just look into their eyes. You don't like to look at those people too much because you know they can look inside of you and see exactly what's going on. And I'm a shabby little shit, so I don't want anybody to know that. But when I stack up the facts of my life, I finally get very clear on something, doing the very best job I can, truly giving this thing called living the very best shot I can give it. Truly. I mean, I've given living the best deal I can make, and I still can't make it. I still can't make it. Bill has a great expression for that, and he lays it out in the book later on. He says, we were burned up. You know, you can stay angry if you want to. I stayed angry from year 10 to year 13. God, I was tired. Just terribly, terribly tired. But I didn't know anything else. I didn't know that there was any other solution. I really didn't. And so most of my experience that I like to share with you all, and I feel compelled to share, is that when it's really hopeless, when your life is terribly, terribly hopeless, and you think, hell, I can't go on like this. I can't go on like this. There is a solution. And I needed a solution like this that was laid out. I'm one who needs numbers. You can eventually take the numbers off, but at one time I needed the numbers. You know, I've done step one. Now what do I do? How about two? I've needed it to stay very simple. This is a marvelously simple little deal. It's so simple that if you do it in the spirit in which it's laid out, it just works grand. You may not do it technically right. We talked about that a little bit last night. I still don't get this technically right. I do it the best way I can each time I do it. But I haven't got it technically right yet. No, not real sure that I ever will. That's been my experience.
The smoker's getting edgy. I can feel it. We want to try to do this on time because we want to tidy this piece up and then move in because we're not quite through here. So, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes? What's it going to take? 10? We'll be in these chairs by that clock at 20 till.